What's up, everyone? This is Lito, and you're listening to Crypto Testers, a podcast keeping you informed about all the coolest projects in the crypto space. In this episode, I talk to Jack Lipstone, one of the founders behind Rari Capital. Rari is a lending protocol aggregator promising to always get the best interest rates for their users who trust Rari with their crypto assets. Since there are multiple lending protocols in the DeFi space, each having different interest rates, it can be quite time-consuming for users to individually always move their assets between apps as soon as interest rates change. Rari automates this process and deposits user assets in whatever protocol delivers the best interest rate, whether it's Compound, Aave, DYDX, or MStable. That's how it is able to consistently offer interest rates between 15 or 20% on dollar deposits or stablecoins. In the episode, we talk about Jack's experience as a 19-year-old founder in DeFi, about the fierce competition among lending aggregators, about Rari's governance and tokenomics, and what Rari has in the pipeline for 2021 to get ahead of the competition. Hey, Jack.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. Thanks for coming on the podcast today.
Of course, thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited to learn more about Rari. Let's start by talking about your background. You look quite young. Like, I'm 26, but you look even younger. How old are you, actually?
Yeah, I'm 19 years old.
Wow. That's really impressive. So, how did you get into crypto?
Yeah, so prior to working on Rari, I co-founded a mobile wallet called Ambo with Jay, who's another co-founder of mine at Rari. And the dream behind Ambo was to provide retail with the easiest to use mobile trading engine to trade all of these different ERC-20 tokens that at the time were really hard to discover and to trade. And then to shed some more light on this, Rari was founded in 2017, which was during a time when there were thousands and thousands of tokens, but there was no easy way to trade them. Like Binance was barely out at the time. Coinbase had very few assets listed as well. So we knew that we were in the right market for this.
So you were like 16 at that time?
Yeah, it was about sophomore year of high school.
Crazy. And So can I imagine this as being a bit like Zerion, or was it an actual trading app, like centralized trading app where you could just trade any asset against any other asset?
Yeah, so it was a mobile wallet. So when you downloaded Ambo, you generated your own wallet. And then we plugged into the 0x protocol where people were able to trade all of the different assets supported by 0x. And then it then evolved into a DEX aggregator where we were basically finding the best prices for all these different tokens.
So that's pretty crazy because you were really early to think about these ideas, because if you look at the space now, these things actually exist, but you were trying to build this like 3 years ago when there was not the right tooling in place. And so you built with what was there. So 0x, I guess, was the only DEX protocol that you could work with. Really impressive that you thought about this so early. But I guess you exited this company, you know, you sold it to MyCrypto, is that right?
Yes. So over the few years, we built our team and we ended up being acquired by MyCrypto in January of 2019. And then we then launched Ambo under the MyCrypto name. And being with their strong team and community, it allowed us to expand and open this app to the whole world. And it really just allowed us to grow because obviously we were in school at the time and they really supported that notion. I'm sure I'll get to it later on, but being in school for us is what really helps our DeFi companies grow.
And so what happened to Ambo? So it got integrated into the MyCrypto product, or is it like a standalone product today?
Yeah, so Ambo is its own app. It's completely separate from the MyCrypto app. And it's a mobile app on the App Store that allows people to generate their own wallet and start trading all these different tokens.
Okay. And it's still being used? Is it popular?
Yeah, it's still on the App Store. I'm sure lots of people are still using it, but we're no longer there.
Okay. And how did you get into crypto? I mean, you were 16. I was doing very different things when I was 16. How did you even know about DeFi and all of that?
Yeah, definitely. So I've been investing in stocks for a long time. I just grew up following the market. I was always interested in this trading atmosphere. And I was working on a school project with Jay, who's my other co-founder. And it was a competition that we did every year together. And he just started teaching me about crypto because one of his former employers was teaching him about Ethereum. And then from there, he just started teaching me everything I had to know. And then at Ambo and My Crypto, started learning all about DeFi. And then by the time Rari started, it was basically the DeFi summer of 2020.
And I guess you're a developer then, no? Because, I mean, to build all of that, you must have had some technical skills already. Or did you learn it then from scratch?
Yeah, so I don't do any of the development work. It's more business development, strategy, everything that doesn't have to do with the actual coding.
Okay. And that is your co-founder. Is it Jay, his name?
Yeah. So at Ambo, Jay was the one that coded the front end of the iOS app.
Okay.
And but then now at Rari, we have multiple developers, all specializing in different things.
Okay. And just to finish this off, so you're still working with MyCrypto, or now that you're developing Rari, which we'll come to, you're completely separated, you closed that chapter?
Yeah, we separated from MyCrypto in April of this past year. And then Rari was announced in June of 2020.
Okay. And yeah, how is it being a young founder in DeFi? For me, it really shows how permissionless this space is, that anyone can just, you know, build things. And I guess if it was in traditional finance, nobody would take you guys seriously as 16 years old. You know, even finding partners and like banking partners and stuff if you want to build a fintech product is super complicated. But in DeFi, no one can stop you. You just do your thing. The code speaks for itself, so to say. And you're not the only young founders. They're also the guys of Polymarket. They're also quite young. But I was wondering, how is that experience when you talk to investors, for example?
Yeah, it's definitely been a pretty major adjustment. I mean, you compare it, as you said, to all these traditional finance companies. If I was to walk in their doors as like a 16, 17-year-old, it would be very hard to convince them that like we were actually building a great product. And that's what I love about DeFi and crypto in general. It's that it doesn't matter where you are in the world. It doesn't matter how old you are. It's all open source code that anyone can interact with. As long as you're smart and you're able to really explain the code, I see no reason why anyone at any age could do it. I mean, Vitalik started Ethereum when he was extremely young as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Certainly, like, our team is very young, but this like has not stopped our dedication, motivation to like change this whole world of finance. And actually, like, a common question that we received when working at Ambo was, why don't you just drop out of school now? And, you know, we thought to ourselves, and we said, our product would have been much different if it wasn't for school. Because at the end of the day, we were building Ambo for the people in our generation, and being able to receive all the user feedback during lunch breaks helped us significantly.
So you basically got your friends from high school into crypto by showing them your product. And I guess nowadays they are very well off because of you, right?
Yeah. So we definitely spent a lot of time explaining crypto, but also since Ambo was meant to just be the easiest to use app, we would basically go to our friends and say, hey, what does this button look like to you? And if it was helpful feedback, then we would basically keep that feature. And if it wasn't, then we would remove it. And that really helped us streamline the app as much as possible to make it as easy as possible for the retail audience.
Gotcha.
And so now at Rari, we spent a lot of time talking to our friends about DeFi and really talking to them about how you can own these stable coins, you can own ETH, but look, now you can go and earn yield on it through all these different protocols.
Yeah. And
that's really exciting.
Do you feel like when you were 16, they were very receptive for these ideas that you had? And is it easier to convince them nowadays of crypto and DeFi? Have you seen a shift in mindset since then?
I think it's definitely gotten a lot easier. I think because crypto has become more prevalent. I mean, you see it on the news more often. And then, especially in college, you have people who are majoring in like computer science, for example, where they're even teaching about crypto.
Okay. Well, let's get into what Rari is and yeah, how you got the idea behind it.
Yeah, definitely. So Rari Capital was first announced in June of 2020, and our beta launched about a month later. And the reason for starting this is because we recognize the need for the yield aggregation in the space, as there are all these insanely cool protocols to generate yield, but they just required way too much technical knowledge. So it first started out as a yield aggregator, and then it turned into an autonomous farming machine, basically, during the whole DeFi craze this past summer. So an example of this is our Compound Finance integration that's lending funds to Compound, and then it would liquidate the earned comp and then distribute it back to our users. But now that the hectic DeFi summer is over, like, we aren't just some farm to stake and earn our governance token like a lot of the other DeFi products out there, but we're actually we're focused on this idea and vision behind the sustainable yield in DeFi, which is a term that's commonly skipped over as users seek 100% yields that are obviously not sustainable. Mm-hmm. Sure, we have like all these different lending protocols integrated with more on the way following our next audit, but the creative strategies that we've lined up is what excites me the most. And then these strategies can be a mixture of both on-chain and off-chain creations that are all working towards providing the highest yield possible to our users.
Okay.
It goes a lot farther than just basic lending, because we do see those rates eventually trending towards zero as more capital flows into this ecosystem.
Okay. So more than just lending, meaning what else could be enabled?
Yeah. So we have a few different products that are in the pipeline, which I can't say too much about. But we have this one product called Fuse, which is just a money market of money markets, basically. And then we have this Vault product, which will allow people to deposit any type of asset to then borrow and then deploy that capital into Rari.
Okay. Let's talk a bit about the current shape of Rari. So the idea is basically to create this one place where average users can turn to and just deposit their capital and set and forget about it. Like, they can just relax because they know that Rari will always like have, if not the best yield in DeFi, at least a very high yield consistently, because you'll do the work behind the scenes to generate that yield. Is that correct?
Exactly. So we want people to come in, deposit into one of the three pools, and basically just leave their money and watch it compound over time, while the protocol and the rebalancer is constantly searching for the highest yield, and then also constantly integrating new protocols and new strategies to achieve that higher yield.
Okay. Yeah, I have the app opened in front of me. I see there's, so first of all, there's $68 million locked in the app. So that's kind of assets under management, mm-hmm. How much money you have at disposal. And there's three vaults, right? There's like a stable pool, a yield pool, and an ETH pool. Can you explain what the differences are and what of strategies are working behind the scenes to generate these returns? Because I see there's like 16%, 15%, and then the ETH pool only has 0.17%. What's happening there?
Yeah. So when we first launched our beta in July, it was the stable pool. So that was our initial pool, and that's been our most popular along with the ETH pool. And the stable pool is denominated in USDC, and it's just lending USDC across Compound, Aave, DYDX, and also MStable. While the yield pool is actually swapping between stable coins to optimize for the highest yield. So say the pool's allocation is in USDC today, but tomorrow DAIs are turning higher on Compound, then the whole pool just swap to DAI. So there's a little bit more risk in that pool because of the asset price fluctuation, rather than the stable pool, which is just denominated in USDC.
Okay. Does it also mean that in the stable pool, I can only deposit USDC, and in the yield pool, I can also deposit DAI? Or in both cases, you deposit USDC, but in the background, in the yield pool, you could in the background then switch it to DAI, for example, or USDT. But like, can you deposit in any asset?
Yeah, you can deposit ETH, you can deposit any ERC-20 token. And then as soon as you deposit, it'll exchange for whatever the pool's allocation is at that time.
Okay. Yeah. And what is happening in the ETH pool? So the return there is much, much lower. How do you use the ETH that is deployed?
Yeah. So in the ETH pool, ETH is being lent on Compound, Aave, DYDX, very similar to the stable pool, except in this case, you're now maintaining exposure to the price of Ethereum. And yeah, the yield is certainly not that high, but it is very hard to achieve high ETH APY in the space. But we have a few different strategies that are just waiting for their audit that will come out hopefully the next month or so that'll certainly raise this APY.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that Alpha, Homura, mm-hmm. they have a pretty high APY on ETH.
Yeah, and that'll be one of the strategies.
Okay, cool. Yeah. And for the stable pool, could you repeat what the strategy there was?
Yeah, sorry. So the stable pool is fully denominated in USDC. Yeah. And it's lending USDC across Compound, Aave, DYDX, and MStable.
Okay. So it's a bit like idle finance where it just switches to whatever protocol has the best yield.
Exactly. Okay. And then you don't have to worry about the asset price fluctuation because it's just in one currency.
Yeah. And how would you say you differentiate with other lending aggregators or yield aggregators, however you call them, like Yearn or Harvest, I mean even Pickle? There's really a couple. How do you see the space, and how do you feel like Rari has an edge on its competitors?
Yeah, I would say our UI and UX is very strong, especially as we enter towards the retail and institution audience. I think that our whole interface will make it as easy as possible to onboard users. And we're making this a lot easier. I also think another area that we stand out is that if there's a yield aggregator that does lending better than us, we'll just integrate them. Mm-hmm. We don't want to be the sole yield aggregator for lending. If we see someone that's doing it a little bit better than us, then we'll go ahead and we'll integrate them as long as they pass our risk assessment framework and it goes through an audit. Another area where we'll stand out is the on-chain and off-chain strategies that I mentioned earlier that will really contribute to the sustainable yield. And these will also come through other products that we build from the Rari Capital team.
What does that mean, on-chain and off-chain strategies?
Yeah, so by on-chain, more of these strategy-based ones, using protocols and delivering the highest yield, whether through farming or just depositing into pools, or off-chain, where it's similar to Abra in a way, where they lend to third world countries. So it's using the capital in different areas that are not all on the blockchain.
Okay, so you could use some of the assets that are kind of deployed into Rari and lend it to a company or a country or whatever.
Exactly.
Okay. Wow. Okay, that is really completely different than any of the other on-chain protocols. What are the risks in that approach?
Yeah, so obviously, all of this stuff would have to go through a governance vote.
Yeah.
To make sure that our community is okay with it. But it would basically allocate a certain amount of the AUM, go ahead and lend that to companies or people that are in need of the money, and then take whatever that fixed interest rate is and then bring it back to our users.
Okay.
And all of that is still very early in development, so there's really not much there.
Okay, yeah. And in general, what do you see as the risks involved in yield aggregators such as Rari, but also the others that I mentioned before? Because obviously the APYs are incredible. Like when I look at Euros, 17%, 16%, and I think they've been like this pretty much since you launched, or even higher. Super interesting. Do you think everybody should just convert their dollars into stablecoins and invest it in protocols like yours? Probably the answer is yes, but what are the risks?
Yeah, definitely. And we're fully transparent about this. So coming from MyCrypto, which was a very security-focused company, we were able to take all these different skills and values learned and apply them to Rari. And so, as I said, we believe in full transparency. So even before we launched our beta, we had a whole Medium article that it highlighted all the types of risks that our users may take on when depositing into Rari. And then as well as that, we also generated our own risk assessment framework that's applied to all potential protocols that either the Rari team wants to integrate into Rari or contributors. So depending on the outcome of this assessment, the strategy is either integrated into our yield pool, which is the high risk and high reward, or not integrated at all. And it's not worth integrating a protocol with extremely high returns, but a very risky one in terms of the poor results from our test. So some of the elements that we look for when assessing new strategies are smart contract risk, financial risk, and centralization risk. So for the smart contract risk, we assess audits, bug bounty programs, and history of the smart contracts. While for centralization risk, we look into the administration behind the protocol, all the way up to the oracles and even the underlying team's background.
Mm. Yeah, because...
So we'll go ahead and we'll get in touch with the team just to make sure that we're comfortable with them.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, the more you aggregate, the more risk you take on, right? Because any protocol is basically that is stacked on one another. For example, if you integrate your like Harvest, let's say, then you'll be at the top. Like that's where the user deposits their funds. But then underneath, there will be Harvest. And under Harvest, there will be Idle. And under Idle, there will be like DYDX. And under that, there's like DAI, and which is issued by the Maker protocol. So there's a lot of levels of code.
Yeah, it's like a whole staircase. And we just do everything we can to protect the stack from the top.
Yeah.
So all of our code is audited by QuantStamp, which is a leading audit firm in the space. And then we're also developing internal insurance mechanisms.
Yeah, I think one of the issues that lending aggregators face is that they have to add strategies very quickly, right? Because they always want to have the highest yield offer them to their users, otherwise the users might leave. And so they need to add strategies quickly. But if you rush it too much, well, maybe you don't assess the risk properly and you make mistakes. So there's always like a trade-off between speed and security. But you guys seem to, you prefer to err on the side of security and be a bit slower if need must be. Is that correct?
Yeah. So obviously we could be developing these strategies and pushing them out immediately, but they need to go through audits. They need to go through our whole risk assessment framework. Mm. So it would be great to achieve the high yields that we see today, but it's not worth the risk if that APY is also going to drop tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, and especially with DeFi moving faster than like any other industry, and like the sector definitely feels like 1 week in the space is equivalent to a year in traditional finance. So, at the same time, a yield aggregator like us must stay competitive by providing the highest yield, but it's just not worth that extra boost of return if we don't see it as a comfortable integration.
And let's talk a little bit about the RARI token. I mean, there's a whole governance. You mentioned it before. How does that work? What's the utility of the RARI token? How does the governance process look like? All of that.
Yeah. So the RARI governance token was distributed over a 60-day liquidity mining period to all users who had funds deposited into any of our three pools. So each day that they were earning yield, they were also earning our token on top of that. And currently, the token is purely just for governance. So if you want to go ahead and create a proposal, you would use your RGT and then you would vote with it. But recently, some RARI improvement proposals that the RARI Capital Core team proposed will give more useful mechanisms to the token, such as staking, pool 2 rewards to incentivize DEX liquidity, and even an updated emission schedule that will introduce a longer-term liquidity mining period. So we've had several proposals passed in the past few weeks, and all of these will set RARI up for the long term. And then going along with our inflation period, it'll introduce a smart treasury that will replace our current buyback and burn mechanism, and it'll be a treasury managed by the DAO, and the RGT holders will choose where to deploy capital best as long as it supports the RARI protocol. And then there's even a future where an allocation from this treasury is invested in funds similar to what YAM is doing with their treasury.
Yeah. The liquidity mining program, that was 60 days. So back then when you deposited money into RARI, you were getting RARI governance tokens on top of the normal yield. And so this was leading to very high APYs. And nowadays, so this liquidity mining program is over. Does that mean that there's never going to be any RARI governance tokens being minted, or have we reached like a fixed cap, or is there like more liquidity mining programs coming up soon?
Yeah, so RIP1, which was the first RARI proposal passed, that introduced a new inflation plan that will bring back liquidity mining for a longer period.
Okay, and these tokens, like you have basically changed the supply. You've minted new tokens for that. Or were they always like kind of existing, or are you taking them out of the treasury or something?
Yeah, so I think right now the circulating supply is about 9.4 million out of 10 million. Mm-hmm. And that's because a decent amount of tokens were burned through our early RGT claim penalty.
Yeah.
So we're going to be minting it back to 10 million. And we're going to use all that, what was burned RGT, and that will be used for pool two rewards on DEX for DEX liquidity.
Yeah.
And then we're going to mint all the way up to 20 million. And so it's 10 million new tokens that will be used for this new inflation period. And then after this is over, the RARI team will not support any other inflation plans.
Okay. Yeah, you mentioned, so you're changing from this buyback and burn, where you basically any revenue that is generated by the protocol is used to buy RARI tokens on the market and burn them to create like this deflationary pressure. And now you're changing it to, I forgot how it's called, this new mechanism.
Yeah, it's called the smart treasury.
Smart treasury. Exactly. That's what has been suggested by a placeholder, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Can you explain a bit what the advantages of that? Because I've seen that it's gaining a lot of popularity in various DeFi protocols. Can you explain what the trade-offs are and why it's so interesting to do it?
Yeah. So we recognize that buyback and burns really did not, it wasn't sustainable. Sure, it was adding buying pressure to the market, but it was also burning all this useful RGT. So we spent a lot of time, and Placeholder came out with this amazing article about it. And so the smart treasury is basically a buyback and make. So we're actually buying RGT off the market and then putting it back into this treasury. And it's a treasury that's built on Balancer, so using a Balancer pool, and it's used for earnings into the RARI ecosystem. And it'll go and rebalance to optimize for pool allocations. So it basically accumulates value into a diverse treasury instead of just burning the tokens.
Okay. And why is the burning not creating any value, or not any, but like what are the downsides basically of it?
The downsides of the smart treasury?
Of the burning.
Well, yeah, with the buyback and burn, we're just constantly losing RGT, which could be better utilized in favor of the protocol.
Okay. Yeah, I also saw that you have an interesting merger that was announced, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago with Melon Protocol. Can you explain what the rationale behind that is and what the merger entails? Because merger is a weird word in DeFi when you speak of protocols. How will it work in practice?
Yeah, definitely. So it's Melon is now called Enzyme Finance, and they'll be launching their V2, I believe, in just a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And so the RARI protocol will be migrated and built on top of Enzyme. And that building on top of them will allow us to focus strictly on the creative yield generating strategies while being able to unleash some of the infrastructure and back office type of stuff to Enzyme. Because that team has been around for a long time. They understand security. They know user experience very well. So we're looking forward to continuing our mission of delivering the highest yields while building on top of Enzyme.
Okay. And what does Enzyme earn from that? I mean, I don't know their protocol too much. I know that it's sort of like an investment manager where anyone can suggest strategies and decide how to use certain capital. But yeah, how will this look like in practice?
Yeah, so Melon, now Enzyme, allows fund managers to come in and basically create their own funds on the blockchain. So it's like an asset management system. So RARI will be its own fund built on top of Enzyme. And then other fund managers will be able to come in and use the RARI pool tokens as different strategies.
Okay. But for example, suggesting a strategy is one thing, right? Maybe one of these fund managers has a good idea. But then implementing it in code, is that also taken care of by the Melon protocol? Or is that then like the RARI core team or someone else who does that?
Yeah, so it really depends on what the code is and what it's going to be used for. Some of the code written could be from Enzyme, but most of the RARI code will be written by the RARI core team. And as we get closer to this partnership merger starting, we'll explain more in depth through a Medium article on what RARI is doing and what Enzyme is doing.
Okay. And for you, it's basically a way to get more eyeballs on your code, on your project, get more brain power, also more people contributing ideas. Because I guess today the problem in DeFi is that you have a bit this like governance apathy where all these protocols are decentralized and they have governance, but many actually don't have the community behind it to make anything of it. Like no one is actively involved. Most people just hold the tokens. And here by working with Melon, you go under their like umbrella of people and smart investors. Is that sort of the rationale behind it?
Yeah, definitely. And then we also believe in this idea of like community assimilation between the two products. So I'm not sure if you saw, but we'll be doing like a cross token split. So Rari token holders will receive some Melon tokens, and Melon token holders will receive Rari governance tokens through an airdrop.
Okay.
And although like the amount isn't much, the conjunction of the two communities is what's most important to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense to create like common, like aligned interests. But are there any other funds that already work with Melon, or are you the first one?
Yeah, so there are a few different funds already. I believe right now their TVL is around 2 million, I believe, last time I checked. And so with their V1, they had many different funds built on top of them. And I believe with their V2 coming around the corner, there'll be a lot more funds building on top.
And do you see any kind of danger if, you know, they have other funds then, which might be bigger, that there's sort of a competition then between the funds and that your fund gets less attention? Or would this be even a good thing, maybe?
Yeah, I don't see any downside to that. I think we'll actually be able to give a lot of our strategies to other fund creators if they do want some of our pool tokens. And Rari is just going to continue to innovate. All of these new strategies that I talked about earlier will continue to push our yield up. And there'll be no reason why if our yield is higher than any other DEX aggregator to not deposit into Rari.
And the Melon protocol, it benefits from this in that if it suggests a strategy that gets implemented in Rari and then it gets like a cut of that, or how does it work?
It doesn't really work that way. It's more so that the Rari capital pools are now funds on top of Melon. So it's supporting them because obviously there'll be more traction to their website. Their TVL will be greater because as the Rari TVL is pretty high right now. There are a lot of other benefits, but it's not so about like the fee split between the teams, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So they are really in, they control the funds. Once this merger will be completed, the TVL that's now in Rari will be like in Melon, so to say.
No, so we still have full autonomy over it.
Okay.
Nothing, there isn't really that much change to the user.
Mm-hmm.
It's really nothing. It's more like the back end of the infrastructure stuff that may change a little bit, but we still have full autonomy over the product. And at the end of the day, it's the RGT holders that have a say. So say one day the token holders want to come together and move away or change something, all that has to be done is just a vote.
Mm-hmm.
So no. Melon is not controlling the Rari pools. Uh-huh. It is still in the hands of Rari and the token holders.
So it's more an optional thing where you work with them, and if they have good ideas, then they might get implemented if it passes a vote. But it could also happen that an idea doesn't come from Melon, comes from like someone else, and still gets implemented after.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's also one of the reasons for the smart treasury that we'll be building up after this upcoming inflation plan. And that will build a treasury of RGT that will be used to reward contributors for developing code for the Rari protocol.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I promised that we'd be over in 4 minutes. So yeah, maybe do you want to finish off by telling us a bit about your vision for 2021? And I know the Bitcoin Vault is one big part of that. Can you walk us through the vision and the Bitcoin Vault and how it works?
Yeah, definitely. So there's obviously a lot of wrapped Bitcoin now showing up on Ethereum. And so we'll be opening up a Bitcoin pool that takes advantage of all the different lending opportunities that wrapped Bitcoin has to offer. And then following this, I definitely see a future where the Rari pool introduces other types of Bitcoin pairs like HBTC, RenBTC, And then we're also in development on a vault-like system that I mentioned earlier that will allow people to deposit any type of asset to then take exposure to any RARI pool. So say if they have HBTC and they want to deposit into the stable pool, they'll be able to borrow against it.
Mm-hmm. And what will this Bitcoin do in the background? Like how will it generate?
Yeah, so it'll be very similar to our other pools. It'll be lending across Compound, Aave, Harvest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And any other exciting developments? I mean, you said there's a lot that's being currently audited. What's the estimated time for being deployed on chain?
So in terms of all the strategies that we've been talking about recently, those are all finished. The code has been written. That's all finished. The Bitcoin pool is actually finished as well. It's all just waiting on audits. And now that the holidays are over, we're hoping to get those out as soon as possible. And then in terms of like 2021, the vault system is going to be really cool. And along with Fuse, which, as I said earlier, it's the market of money markets. And we'll hopefully be coming out with a Medium article soon that explains that more in depth. And then going off of that, other things that we have in the pipeline consist of a decentralized rebalancer, which will allow people to come in and actually rebalance the pools rather than the RARI core team always being in charge of that.
Yeah.
We're also looking into doing a top-down DAO structure, as well as an implementation of all these different RARI improvement proposals, and then more integrations similar to our latest release with Saffron Finance, which uses the RARI pool as an adapter to generate yield for their tranches.
That's super interesting. Did you look at the price a lot? I was wondering because I've seen I've been following it a bit the last 2 or 3 weeks, and I see that it really goes like an elevator, like up to like 70 cents and then down to 40 cents again. And it's for me, like the whole protocol looks a bit undervalued. If you look at the total value locked, which is quite considerable with 65 million, and then if you compare it to like other lending aggregators who have similar TVL or higher, but they're valued far higher by the market. And if I look at you guys, like you have a lot of ideas. Yeah, it seems to me a little bit undervalued at the moment. How do you think about that?
Yeah, honestly, I don't follow the price at all. I don't really think like the short-term fluctuations make a big difference in the long term. As I've said on this call, we have tons of new strategies, tons of new developments on the RARI protocol, as well as these other products that the RARI Capital team is building that will all contribute to the RARI protocol and the yield aggregator in general. So it's not really something I care about right now, just because I know that as we start to incentivize DEX liquidity, the market will definitely change.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Thank you so much. And I will continue to follow closely, and let's speak soon.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Thanks. Hey, it's me again. I hope you liked this episode. If you did, please feel free to share it with your friends and family or give us a follow on Twitter or LinkedIn. And if you have some feedback, reach out to me. I'd love to hear it.